Good evening. Now we're back to normal. That's a joke from last night. Hope everyone is doing well. And I certainly am glad to see everyone here. This crowd just amazes me. I appreciate so much all of you coming. You know, we're supposed to have something to eat after a while. And some of you may be thinking that the dessert will come in about 2 or 3 hours out there under the pavilion. But this is dessert for me. It's not going to get any better than this when I stand up here and I see all of you, because I know that you're here to hear the Word. I do not believe that you're here just to hear me, but I think that you're here because you think that I'm going to present the Word to you, because that's the most important thing I can do and that you can come to listen to is the Word of the Lord. Tonight we want to talk about leadership. Before we get into the lesson, though, I probably will not remember it after the lesson, but I want to thank the brethren that asked me, gave me the opportunity to do this, to bring these lessons to you. I appreciate it so much. We want to talk about leadership. I wanted to leave this lesson with you because I feel like the church needs good leadership. It's always needed good leadership. It needed it 50 years ago. It needed it 40 years ago. It needs it now. It's going to need it 100 years, it's going to need it 1,000 years if the world stands. The church, the congregations need good leadership. Now, you may be sitting there saying, well, I'm a woman, I am a man, but not blessed with leadership abilities. Public speaking scares me to death. I just am not able to ever do that. So this lesson, I'm just going to sit here and just let it go over. Don't do that. Because I believe each one of us are responsible for the kind of leaders that we have in church. See, leadership's got to go two ways. There's got to be people willing and talented enough and willing to develop themselves to lead. But there's got to be people willing to be led and willing to support those leaders. And I sort of like this passage in Proverbs 27 and 17 that says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. I think of that. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. My feeling is that in a congregation, you may have a person who is an excellent Bible student, but perhaps not blessed with the gift to get up and speak. But he may be actually sharper than the people that are doing the speaking. So what is his duty? God's given him a talent and intelligence. And that need not go to waste. So what can he do with it? Keep prodding the leaders. If the leaders are not doing what they need to be doing, if they're not steering the church, if the church is sort of adrift, those that know what needs to go on, it's their responsibility to kind of push and to prod the women as well as the men. That can be done in private. So this is a lesson for all of us. Which way is the church going to go for the next 50 years? The way we take it. The congregation I'm speaking of. Now, the heavenly spiritual church, God's going to take care of. But our job as part of the congregation is to make sure the congregation does the best it can to get as many people into that spiritual church and living for the Lord. So let's talk about leadership just a little bit. As the leaders go, so go the followers. 1 Corinthians 11 and 1, Paul said, be you followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. And that lays the pattern down. You see, we follow Christ. And so if we're a leader in church, we expect people to follow us if we are the example that we're supposed to be. But that's as far as it goes. In other words, you wouldn't follow me because I'm following my dad, because he followed his dad. See, the line doesn't keep going from person to person. The line goes from the person that you're following to God, unless you're the leader, unless you're following someone. As Paul said here, be you followers of me. Now, why would Paul say that? Simply because he had the experience. He had the knowledge. Divinely inspired, yes, but he had the experience and he had the knowledge, and he knew that those who were novices, who were babes in Christ, they need to look up to someone with more maturity. And so Paul says, you follow me, I will follow Christ. And that's the pattern all the way down through the ages. We follow someone with more maturity, but that person follows Christ. Let's look at some types of leaders. We're going to look at a few bad ones, but then we're going to look at some good ones. Let's look at false leaders. This is where we as members of the congregation have got to be careful, that we not allow false leaders to lead us astray. Isaiah 3:12 says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you, look, cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths." How can that happen? Who is being criticized here? The leaders or the people that allowed it to happen? The people that allowed it to happen. It's that same way now. If the Lord were to rebuke the congregation, He would rebuke the congregation because they allowed a false leader to lead them to error. There are those that are blind leaders. Notice something interesting about this. Luke 6:39, He spake a parable unto them, "Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch?" The blind lead the blind. How could the blind lead unless the other blind allow themselves to be led? Well, at some point, it seems like somebody needs to be asking somebody where the ditch is, so to speak. At some point, someone needs to be asking the question, is this right? Is this scriptural? Do we have a basis for this? Is it right to spend the money this way? Is it right to get into this activity? Is it right for this to be taught? People in the congregation, the blind lead the blind, they will both fall in the ditch. And we don't want either one to. There are even those that lead silly subjects. 2 Timothy 3:6, "For this sort," meaning the false teachers, "are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sins, led away with divers lust." Now, sorry to say, but there's always going to be somebody that's going to try to lead someone away that's silly. And by silly, I mean someone who is not serious, who's not grounded, who can be swayed easily, be it a man or a woman. There's always going to be con men out there that will tell you whatever you want to hear to get what they want out of you. Now let's look at some good leaders. What about those that lead in a safe way? Psalm 78:53, "And He led them on safely so that they feared not, but the sea overwhelmed their enemies." But notice the kind of leader. He led them safely so that those following Him had no fear. A gentle leader, we would like that, wouldn't we? Isaiah 40:11, "He shall feed His flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with His arm, gather them in His bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young." Can't stress how important it is. If you want to be a leader, lead gently. Lead with a soft voice. Lead with a good example. Lead gently. In a business meeting, handle the business meeting gently. In a meeting with people from other congregations, be gentle. If a brother is in error, be gentle. In all that you do, be gentle. What about a protective leader? Luke 11:4. You recognize this. For the Lord's Prayer, "Forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." If we should pray to God for that, then what should our attitude be toward our leaders? Active followers will help to guide the leaders in the right way. So this lesson is for all of us. Here's a good one. Self-determining. You might think this is about us leading somebody else or us following somebody else. But there's more to this thing of leadership than just another person. The most important part is we lead ourselves. 1 Timothy 2:2, "I exhort therefore that first of all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and honesty." And my prayer is that you are leading a quiet and peaceful life. Can you ask for any more than this? To be able to lead a quiet and peaceful life. Godliness with contentment is great gain. What a blessing. But this is an interesting verse here because this is all up to you and up to me. This hasn't got anything to do with the leadership of this congregation. It's got to do with the direction you decide to go in your life. Do you want a life of being distraught and distressed? Or do you want a life of being quiet and peaceful and contentment? You make that choice that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life. Well, where are we going? What are we going to be led to? Well, the Lord's going to lead us in some unknown ways. Again, in Isaiah 42:16, I will bring the blind by the way they knew not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them. But look at this statement. Lead in paths they have not known. Grew up in the church. I grew up in the church. Most of you grew up in the church. Have you ever been in a situation of something going on in the church and you didn't know how to handle it? Well, I thought that I knew how to do most things as long as I've been in the church. I thought age had something to do with it. Experience had something to do with it. I should be prepared for about anything that can happen, but I found out late in life that you can get in situations that you just don't quite exactly know how to handle. Because there may be a time to take discipline, and yet even the person that needs discipline has got a soul that needs saving. We cannot look at people like they're throwaway people, like they're throwaway souls. Someone doesn't do right, open the door and give them the boot. There's got to be some gentleness. There's got to be some give and take. There's got to be a chance. Give someone a chance for repentance. Tough situations is when discipline is needed. We know discipline is needed. We know people need to do better to get to heaven. But yet, be careful when you decide to drop the hammer. Because sometimes it cannot be retracted. And hurt will follow years. Lead them in paths they have not known. If you sign up for the Lord's service, He'll take you in a path you haven't known. Because He'll put you in a situation to use talents that He gave you that you may not know you have. What about a plain path? Are we content to walk in a plain path? Psalms 27:1, teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Sometimes the simple plain path that's safe is better than a lot of show and pomp that's not safe. So just a simple, steady leadership of our congregations. Just a simple, steady direction. But it needs to be there. What about an eternal way? Of course we want eternity. Psalms 139:23-24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me. And lead me in the way everlasting. Are you walking an everlasting way tonight? Or is the way you're walking the equivalent of a short walk over a deep cliff? Are you walking the path tonight with your time, with your talent, with your resources, with your influence? Are you walking a path which is only going to last as long as you live, and then it's going to be gone? Or are you walking an eternal path where you're laying down tracks for someone to follow behind you that will not only get you to heaven, but will get someone else to heaven? David's prayer was, lead me in the way everlasting. Let's briefly talk about methods of leadership. I alluded to this just a moment ago. Different kind of leaders. Be gentle. There's two kinds. Authority and example. Authority and example. Push and a pull. You're either going to push or you're going to pull. But the very wording of the word leader is what? The very word itself, lead, means to lead someone, to pull someone, not drive. Well, some people haven't got that figured out yet. Authority is push. Hebrews 13 and 17. There is a little bit of a push given to us. Obey them that have the rule over you. And notice that word is emphasized. Have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So look at this verse on the standpoint of the followers of the congregations. They should cheerfully obey those that have the rule. Now, how were they given the rule? How did they get it? Were they elected? Did they buy it? Did they politic and get it? No. They got it by maturity. They got it by knowledge. They got it by practicing with compassion what they had learned. They got it by showing other people that they were worthy to be followed. Now, those that were following need to follow in the right way so that it will be profitable for them. Notice the wording. Do not follow with grief, begrudging, having to be dragged to do anything you're asked to do, because that causes grief. That causes distress. That is not profitable for you. And it's certainly a drag on the leaders, those that are trying. And you know, I haven't checked lately, but I don't imagine the pay rate for the leaders at Oak Grove is really all that high as far as money goes. If anyone is standing up in a congregation trying to lead a congregation, they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they care. Okay, here's the good one. Leadership by example. To pull, which is what a leader is supposed to be. Lead. 1 Peter 5, 2 and 3. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. Not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind. Neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples or examples to the flock. I'd like to add one more statement in here. And if you don't like it, that's okay. Don't listen. But where it says right here, take the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. Most of us know about computer language. I like to put in the word default right there. Not by default. Not because nobody else will do it, but because we are talented and have the knowledge and have the desire to use the talents God gave us. But sometimes our congregations are led by leaders who became leaders by default. That means nobody else would do it. Okay? If that's the best we can do, the church will live off of it. Because the bottom line is, in each individual person has got to lead a Christian life regardless of the leaders in the church. So the bottom line is, if a person wants to be saved, he will figure out a way to be saved. But for the health of the congregation, the leaders don't need to take it by default or constraint, but willingly being examples to the flock. Scriptural qualifications for an elder / leader. 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7. You know what's coming up, but I want to lay something out here before we do. See those two words up there that are separated by / Scriptural qualifications for elder / leader. There's a little difference of opinion of who should be an elder and whether we need elders or not. And even whether it's scriptural to have elders or not. Well, I'm not going to debate that with you, because read the scriptures and see what's in the scriptures. But whoever is doing the job of leading a congregation, whether he be named an elder or not, must have leadership abilities. If a person met the qualifications of being an elder, if he met all of them, if he met all 17 of them that's in this next passage, then he's okay. Because the first one is the one that will knock out a lot of people. But it would be possible for a person to get picked to be elected, so to speak, to be set up as the elder. Maybe he didn't want to be. So, my question is, does a person become a leader because somebody gives him a title of an elder? Or do we function as leaders, and then if it just so happens that we qualify to be an elder, then we'll be an elder? But what I'm trying to get around to is there qualities that we must exhibit to be able to lead people? 17. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desires the good work. That's the first one. And that's the biggest hurdle that I've seen. A man desire. How bad would you like to be an elder? How long are you willing to wait before you can be one? I've not hidden the fact that I wanted to be one. Ever since I got old enough to know what this was about, to know what the church was about, to know what these verses mean, I have tried to live my life so that someday I could be. This was the goal. I mean, the standard. Not a goal like I'm trying to achieve something in this life, but a standard. Whether I got to be or not, I wanted to follow these things right here. I wanted to be at this point. I knew it was going to take a family. I knew it was going to take children. There's purpose for that. I see it now. I didn't see it for a long time, but I see the purpose of having children and having a wife and having all these things. And I wanted to get in that position. Now, as it turned out, that has not become my lot. Because to be an elder, you've got to be in a congregation sometime. And I'm not. I'm in a bunch of them every Sunday. And so I will not make it for that reason. But I'm trying to use the talent that I can. So maybe what I'm saying is for those of you that may be at a congregation and have what you might call a home congregation, pay attention. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler. It goes back to a gentle leader, not a brawler, not covetous, one that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. There's 17 qualifications right there. I have heard it argued this way. That if a person truly followed all the scriptures that were in the Bible, that they would qualify to be an elder simply by doing, don't even look at this list. Don't even look at 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. But follow the rest of what's in the New Testament, and you would automatically meet these things. Well, that's a pretty good argument. A pretty good argument could be made for that position. If you will do these things, there's a few of them that you might not be able to because you might be an unmarried person. That could be true, and you would not qualify on that account. But all these other things are things Christians are supposed to be anyway. So, these are qualifications of an elder or a leader. Now, we're going to close out our lesson and look at the things that are qualifications of a leader that is not an elder. Okay, so you've already taken stock of your life, and for whatever reason, you just don't think that you're going to fit the qualification. Maybe you waited too late. Maybe you just didn't come into the church before you had your children raised and you just didn't know and you raised your children and they've gone and they're rebellious and whatever because of the lifestyle that you live. You come into the Lord's church and you want to do right, but you examine yourself and you're not going to get by that qualification. So, what kind of qualifications would a person need? Now, some of these, all of these, are going to be my opinion, but I had my chief helper to help me do this. Carolyn helped me because she's helped me so much. I'm going to digress here just a minute. I was asked during this past week, where did I get some of these ideas? Having to do with human nature and things like that. And I said, from Carolyn, because her degree was in family and child development. And she did her homework well. Her homework was not just nothing in school. But she would tell me things. And she has guided me. And she's helped me. And I value that guidance. And so I asked her, what do you think of qualities of a leader? A person that wants to lead. And if you were in a congregation, what would you want to be the qualities of the person that was up in front of the congregation leading you? And so, here's 10. Leaders should be enthusiastic. I don't know how to describe this, but do you know someone that's enthusiastic? The scripture talks about us having a good attitude. I've had a few lessons on people who are happy, of having a basic, happy, optimistic attitude. The scriptures tell us this. Enthusiasm can't be bought. A friendly disposition. A church leader. Now think of this. A church leader is one who's going to stand in front of the congregation and greet people at the door. He will be known as the church leader out in the community. Would he want to exhibit a frown all the time, a grouchy almost demeanor, or would he want to be sort of an upbeat kind of a person, a friendly person? I'm not talking about a fakey person there. We know, folks, I'm not talking about the politicians. I'm not talking about the folks that shake in one hand and they can't give you eye contact because they're looking for the next hand to shake. But people that are honest to goodness, friendly, a friendly disposition, certainly. A person that's tireless is going to take it. You're going to be that example to the flock, a person that's tireless. How did Jesus describe it? Whenever I get tired, I think of this parable. Remember the parable of the servant who was in the field plowing and he plowed all day, and Jesus says, that servant has plowed all day. Does he expect to go home after plowing for his master all day and his master meet him at the door and say, oh, my poor servant, you've worked so hard for me. You come in and sit down and let me serve you for a while. Let me wash your feet. Let me bring you fresh clothes. Let me bring you food. Jesus said, no. No. He'll come in that night tired and he'll still have to serve that master with domestic duties that night. Because when he does that, he's only done what it was his duty to do. So when it comes time to do church work, if you ever have an inkling, just a notion to say, I'm too tired to go to church tonight. What right do you have to say you're too tired? Have you earned it? How hard do you have to work to earn the God-accepted right to say, I'm too tired to go? What if it's to get ready to study for a lesson? If something has happened during the day and you planned on studying during the daytime and something happens, you've had to help somebody, you've had to go do this or that or see about somebody or something else, and it gets late at night and you haven't studied, you haven't prepared yourself. Well, it's just too late. I just gonna have to let it go this time. Who gives you the right? How late does it have to get? How much sleep do you have to lose? Now that's tough because we all like our sleep. But what I'm saying is tireless. Tireless. When the servant comes in and he's tired and he serves his master on into the night, Jesus said, you've only done what it was your duty to do. So often I think, when I want to lay down, when I want to quit, when I want to stop, who gives me the right? Would Jesus have done it? Jesus suffered, didn't have a place to lay his head, always helping, always trying to help someone. A public speaker with ability to present ideas clearly. Now, this may be a little off. Not everyone is going to be a public speaker. But I believe that there are many more people that say they're not a public speaker and have no talent than actually don't have talent. And why would I say that? Because I've heard people that say, I can't get up in the crowd and talk. I can't get up in the crowd and say something to church. But if you listen to them during the week, when they're around other people, when they're around their peers or their friends or somewhere else, you'd think they were the center of attention. They'll talk, and they'll talk, and they'll talk about this, and they'll talk about that. And if they've watched a ball game on Saturday, they'll be able to recount 30 minutes fast about that ball game. But yet they'll say, I just can't remember well enough to get up in front of people and speak. And I'm thinking, you know, with just human common sense, that just doesn't compute. Now again, I say that there are people that actually cannot get up and overcome their fears of public speaking. But I don't think it's near as many as we have people that don't and use that for an excuse. Our leaders should be people, my opinion, throw something at me if you don't like it, but our leaders should be people that are willing to put forth the effort to learn to be a good public speaker. There is too much material out there for you to read and study, for you to say, I don't know how to do it. There's plenty of good material out there. A person willing to be someone else, now I'm fond of this one, are you willing to be someone else? You've heard this, you may not have seen it, so I'm going to put it on the screen. This is the obituary that came out in the church bulletin about the death of a member of their congregation, one of their favorite members named Someone Else. The church was saddened to learn this week of the death of one of our church's members, Someone Else. Someone's passing creates a vacancy that will be difficult to fill. Else has been with us for many years. Someone did far more than a normal person's share of the work. Whenever there was a job to do or a meeting to attend, one name was on everyone's lips. Let someone else do it. It was common knowledge that someone else was among the largest givers in the church. Whenever there was a financial need, everyone just assumed that someone else would make up the difference. Someone else was a wonderful person, sometimes appearing superhuman. But a person can only do so much. Were the truth known, everybody expected too much from someone else. Now, someone else left a wonderful example to follow, but who is going to follow the things someone else did? When you're asked to help, please remember, we can't depend on someone else anymore. A person that's going to be a leader has got to be willing to be the someone else. Be willing to do the things that keeps passed around, and when it comes to you, the old saying goes, the buck stops here. If you want something done, I'll try to do my best. I'm not sure. I'll not make up an excuse. If it's in my God-given ability, I'm going to use the God-given ability I've got before I lose it. Five more. A leader must be willing to delegate. Now, this is sort of hard. This is where we've got to have a balance. If you remember the first lesson we used at Taylor's Crossroads on Sunday night, we used the example of living by every word with balance. If you recall this past week, we talked about the different parts of personality, and one of the hardest parts to overcome, if the easiest for people to slip into, the hardest to overcome, is the controlling part, because it's so easy to control someone else and to micromanage. And yet, the good quality of a controller is his ability to lead. So the balance is a person that will lead in a way that he can get his followers to do the work. And why would this be important? Because people feel better when they've got something to do, when they feel like they're a part of something. They have a chance to buy into something. Now, if you think this is unscriptural, what did the apostles do when there was a matter of the women, the widows, that were not being treated right? They said, we've got other things to do rather than serve tables. We will look out 7 men who are capable men, who are qualified men, who will not shirk their talents, but will exercise them and we'll let them take care of that. So that's a scriptural example. A leader must be willing to delegate, not do it all themselves. Should be a planner with a great mind. Now, this should be a little strange to you, because I believe a leader has got to have a vision of where he's trying to take people. Look at this statement. Small minds talk about people. Average minds talk about things. Great minds talk about ideas. And that's why I said it should be a planner with a great mind. It should be somebody with vision. How long has it been since you've heard of a business meeting call of the brethren, and they brainstormed to come up with a vision of which way the congregation needed to go for the next 10 years? Would that be wrong? Would it be wrong for the leaders to get together? And I know we've got to meet and talk about the mechanics of the church building and the church grounds and who's going to show up to fix this and fix that. We've got to do that. But is that the most important thing that the congregation has got to do, is to make sure the grass is cut? What about a vision of which way the church is going to go? How are we going to get our message across to these young people? How are we going to get others to come? How are we going to keep the ones we've got? How are we going to keep the ones we've got inspired so that when they go to college, they'll come back? Or they'll come back in the community. Or wherever they go, the Lord will be with them and they won't just drop off and not be going to church anywhere. Vision. Ideas. Great minds talk about ideas. Great minds. We need to be a planner with a great mind. We need to have a great desire for others' well-being. Whenever you get too tired to do something, you've got to think. Someone else is going to benefit. They don't know how tired I am. If I don't show up and do what I'm able to do, all they're going to know is he just made an excuse not to come. He just made an excuse not to show up. It's just another excuse not to be there. We have a desire for other people's well-being. We will be that servant that plowed all day and come in at night tired, but they still got work to do. They still got work to do. Strive to be a source of living water. A source of living water. I can't express this as well as Dad can, but he's been studying on what the living waters might be over in Revelation. And part of his idea is the living water is the knowledge of God's Word. We can be a source of the knowledge of God's Word, a source of living water. This person's told the story of being in a religious school, and his instructor lived in a house that this person had to walk by on his way from the library to where he was living. And when he walked by the instructor's house, he would see the instructor as late as he was having to study. When he walked by, he'd see his instructor in there at 11 o'clock at night. And they're studying too. Lamp was on in his study. When he walked by the sidewalk, he could see his instructor. And so one day he asked him, he said, "You taught this course? Why are you up studying as much as I am? I'm the one that's trying to pass the test." And his instructor replied, "Well, I'd rather my students drink out of a flowing stream than to drink out of a stagnant well." That was his reply. So he studied that he might have fresh thoughts, that he might have fresh ideas, that he could be a source of living waters. And you take a person like that, and you just well on the way to finding yourself a leader. You're well on your way to finding somebody that you can start copying. Not only that, if the man's got that kind of attitude, probably there's a lot of other things in his life that you could follow off of. And as Paul said, "Be you followers of me as I am of Christ." And then finally, be a living sacrifice. And many things that we've talked about are along this line of be a living sacrifice. Just ask your question. Who were you put here to serve? Now, Notice, I didn't ask you, who are you serving? I'm asking you, in who do you think you were put here to serve? Were you put here to serve yourself? Were you put here to serve your family? Who were you put here to serve? Were you put here to serve God's people? God's family. Were you put here to serve God's family? Jesus Christ? Now we're getting warm. Now we're getting to where our answer should come from. Now, if I'm put here to serve Him, and I've chosen this as my lot, and I'm part of the call, and I love God, then how much of me have I got to spend doing other things that have got nothing to do with my service to God? How many hours of the day do I have just to spend on me? You know, there's words that describe people that think that they have enough time that they can only serve themselves. Some of them are called narcissists. I didn't get that word right. They exhibit narcissism. They think they're the center of the universe. And some people just are simply hedonists, which pleasure for themselves is what they're after. How many hours in the day, if I'm a true servant of God, if I'm a true living sacrifice, how many hours have I got just to satisfy myself? You've got to answer that for yourself. Be a living sacrifice. Our leaders should be living sacrifices. So, I'll leave this with you. As the leaders go, so go the followers. Again, 1 Corinthians 11:1. Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. This is the pattern. This is the way it's going to roll over. It's not going to change. We're going to have men that will be in charge of assemblies because of their maturity. There will be young ones coming on that will get there with guidance. That's the way God set it up. The Lord that can control the storms of the sea can't control you and I, because He left us the responsibility to take care of ourselves and to train other people. That's the way it's going to be. So, I leave this with you. Which way is the church going to go? Depends on you. It depends on you as leaders. It depends on you as followers, wherever you are. Anyone that's here tonight, subject to the gospel call, we give the same simple invitation after every service. Tonight, if there's any way we can help you, either through obedience to the gospel, to be added to the Lord's church, through the prayers of the church, for help, for strengthening, for restoration, let us help while we stand sing.